You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Tuesday, October 19th, 2021, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, we continue our series of giving out player grades. We're doing report cards for every single player who played in the big leagues with the Orioles this season and finished the year in the organization. And today, we move on to take a look at some of the reserve younger infielders that the Orioles both brought in and had in the system to start this year. But it's a group of four guys who all kind of played varying roles in the infield for the Orioles this season, and all four of them, or potentially none of them, could play a role for the Orioles in 2022, as we're going to talk about Kelvin Gutierrez, Jorge Mateo, Richie Martin, and Jamai Jones. And to help us talk about those four guys, Paul Valley is going to join the podcast once again. He is the co-host of The Bat Around over at PressBox, also is the lead producer for Glenn Clark Radio over at PressBox as well, covering all things Baltimore sports, especially the Orioles. And Paul is going to join us to talk about these four infielders, and we will grade their 2021 seasons and talk about the chances for each of them to be back with the Orioles in 2022. But that's all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. So today we continue a look at the Orioles report card grades in 2021, going to some reserve infielders. But first, did want to thank you for making Locked On Orioles your first listen of the day. Remember, Locked On Orioles is free and available on all podcast platforms, and it's the only podcast bringing you Orioles content 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. You cannot get that anywhere else. So if you're enjoying what you're hearing here on Locked On Orioles, make sure to subscribe to the podcast, follow it, like it on whatever podcast platform you may be listening. Also, specifically, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, if you could leave us a rating and a review down in the comments, that would be fantastic. Really, really helps out the pod and helps us to continue being the only daily Orioles podcast out there. We know the O's aren't playing. There's postseason baseball instead. We're still talking about the Orioles here on this pod. And that's what we're going to continue to do today with Paul Valley of PressBox, The Bat Around, and Glenn Clark Radio. Paul's been on this podcast multiple times before, but today he joins us to continue giving out some report card grades to the 2021 Orioles. And today we're talking about some reserve infielders. We're going to chat about Kelvin Gutierrez, Jorge Mateo, Richie Martin, and Jamai Jones. All of them played very varying roles in the Orioles infield in 2021. None of them were full-time starters for the entire year, but all of them have big question marks heading into 2022, and we're going to hand out some grades with Paul Valley, talk about which of these guys could be back next year, which of them may be DFA candidates this offseason and may never play for the Orioles again, and we'll really look into the 2021 season. Get into a good conversation as well about Kelvin Gutierrez versus Jorge Mateo. If it came down to the Orioles choosing one of them for next year, who would you choose? Have a good chat with Paul about that as well. So that's all coming up. We're giving out grades to the reserve infielders with Paul Valley right now. Paul, first of all, thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me, man. I certainly appreciate it.
And so we have you on to continue this series, giving out player grades for the Orioles 2021 season, something we did after the 2020 year, to kind of do a recap of pretty much everybody. And the reason I like to do this is because it's hard to fit all these guys into one or two episodes because the Orioles cycle through a whole lot of players, and we really don't know which of these guys are going to be back next year. And the group we're going to talk about today, I think, is interesting to talk about that because we've got the group of young infielders, Kelvin Gutierrez, Jorge Mateo, Richie Martin, and Jamai Jones. And as we said, you know, kind of before coming on the air, I think all four of these guys have a chance to be in big league camp with the Orioles in March of 2022. Do you see it that way? Do you think all four of these guys will be in Sarasota?
I think all four of them will be there. Not sure how many of them will crack camp with the team, but all four I think should be there. There's no reason why they wouldn't be.
Yeah, and you know, the only thing maybe is if, you know, a guy like Gutierrez became a 40-man roster crunch and somebody wanted to claim him on waivers. That's really kind of the only guy I feel like might not be there. But there's probably a good chance, even if he would be DFA'd at some point this offseason,
I bet he would stay in the organization. So let's start with Kelvin Gutierrez, because who would have thought by the end of the season, he was basically playing third base every single day for the Orioles and was honestly playing really well in September. Now you look at the, you know, end of year line for him, you know, with the Orioles, it was 47 games and, you know, the offensive stats don't look amazing for him, but by the end of the year, you know, even though he did hit 248 in total, I mean, he was hitting, you know, over 300 for the last couple of weeks of the season, had a couple of home runs in there and kind of did impress me at the end of the year. So I wanted to start with you, Paul. What kind of grade do you give to Gutierrez for his, albeit abbreviated, chunk of the Orioles 2021 season?
So I'm going to give him a C+. And the reason is the defense was really good. The defense was the best they had at third base all year. The bat struggled for the majority of the year. And, you know, as Buck Showalter always used to say, September makes a lot of fools out of everybody. And the bottom line is, how well can he hit at the major league level? You said that he might be a roster crunch with the 40-man roster. I think he's got the inside track to be their starting third baseman on opening day next year. I think that he's on the roster for good. It's just a matter of whether or not he can hit at the major league level. September was really nice. You started to see why he was a better regarded prospect in the Royals organization. And again, with that glove, especially with the young pitching staff, I think that they feel like this is a guy who we want to take a longer extended look at starting next spring. And again, the bat played really well in September. Now, if he can roll that over into spring training and the start of next year, I think the Orioles might have a player on their hands. Is he going to be the third baseman of the future? I don't think so. I think that job belongs either Jordan Westberg or Gunnar Henderson. But for 2022, I think he's got the inside track, but the bat needs to catch up to the glove, and that's why he's a C+ rather than a higher grade.
Yeah, I think I'll give him a C for the year. It was interesting because at the end of the day, like, you know, 89 plate appearances in September, he hit 284. He had a 348 on base. Like, with the defense he gives you, which I've said many times, and I don't think is much of a hot take at all, like, that's the best defensive third baseman we've seen in Baltimore since Manny Machado. And it's only been 3 years since then, and there hasn't been a lot of good players in that spot. So it's not like it was a high bar to clear, but it was true. He made some plays that you can imagine, you know, Manny and only Manny making over at third base at times. And really the issue for him was, I mean, when he first came over to the Orioles, I mean, this was, you know, he was with the O's back in June. It seems like he came over later than that, but he was, you know, claimed in June. He literally couldn't hit. I mean, he was hitting around 150 for really the first month and a half he was with Baltimore. And I mean, there were some swings from Gutierrez that were further away from breaking balls than you ever see from major league hitters. And he just looked like he was a player who got to where he was because of his defense. And maybe hit got hot at the right time with the bat to get him that chance in the big leagues with the Royals, but was really not a hitter. But what we saw at the end of the year, after a horrendous June, a horrendous July, and honestly, a horrendous August at the plate, in September, he got himself, I believe he ended the year on just about almost a 10-game hitting streak. He was hitting, you know, just about 300 when you combine those three games in October plus all of September. And he didn't show a lot of power, but he hit a couple of home runs in that stretch as well. And he showed at the very least that he can get himself on base and at least have a hot streak. But the thing is, as you said, you know, Buck saying September can make fools out of us, the overall picture of him as a hitter was not good. And it was, you know, below what we saw from most of the guys we're going to talk about today for long stretches. And I just don't know, unless September is the normal, I don't think he can stay in the big leagues, because I just don't think that bat is anywhere close to where it needs to be.
Well, right. And what you like about him, the body type profiles as a big league player. He's got the speed. He's got the defense. Now, it's not like he was playing against expanded rosters that were up to 40 players against teams that are just running guys out there to give him a shot. It was all against playoff teams. Who were trying to make the playoffs, trying to make that run at the end of the season. So the competition was stiffer. And what you like to see is that he was making adjustments and he was getting better as his season wore on. I don't know that he's going to be a big league everyday player, but I'm intrigued enough by him to say I know they're going to give him a shot and give him the inside track at third base, unless they do something out of the norm and go sign like an Eduardo Escobar or something like that this offseason. But I think he's got the inside track.
Yeah, he had hits in 14 of his final 16 games with the Orioles, including he had a 3-for-5 on the final day of the season against Toronto, which is always nice to finish strong. And, you know, I feel like they're going to try to upgrade there. I don't know if it's going to be a huge upgrade, but I could see like a step up from a Michael Franco move being made where it's a major league deal to a guy who can play the left side of the infield who slots in at third. And this is the other thing, like of the four guys that we're going to talk about today, I think Gutierrez is the one guy who could potentially maybe not be in camp with the Orioles next year. And I think this is something we mentioned a little bit where if he's potentially DFA'd and maybe a team sees that defense and says, we want to give him a shot too. And only would be DFA'd if the Orioles found that there were just that many prospects that needed to be protected from the Rule 5 draft that they needed to make a move. Right. That is the only reason there I could see him being gone where another team would take a flyer on him. But I do think there's a chance where that could happen. He could pass through waivers and the Orioles could have him as a minor league player. And I just think the perfect spot for him next year is if he is a guy who is sitting in Norfolk and is there for most of the season. And whenever the Orioles have an injury, I am perfectly fine bringing him up to play third, to even play short, to even play second, and would feel good about that for a couple weeks at a time. I just don't know if I'm sold on him being the opening day third baseman. And I know the Orioles aren't trying to win yet, but even at that, they need something better there, I think, than Gutierrez.
Sure, sure. I can't disagree with you that they need something better there. But again, I just think they're intrigued enough by him that he'll make it through the offseason and be there next spring.
Yeah, and they're intrigued enough to stick him at third for the last couple months of the year. Just let him play there. And you know that they were trying to get a look at him. So we'll go from Gutierrez to the other guy on this list who the Orioles claimed off of waivers this season. And that was Jorge Mateo. And he was an interesting guy who the Orioles actually didn't end up getting as long of a look at as they wanted to, because he went down with that back injury late in the year. He kind of had a couple of weird injuries going on that was keeping him in and out of the lineup for a week or two. And then the Orioles and him just kind of came together and said, let's shut it down for the rest of the year. Especially get some other guys, some at bats. Mateo, 26 years old. We only really saw him play the infield, but he kind of came up as an outfielder and he's able to play all three outfield spots. He can really play everywhere but catch, essentially. Mm-hmm. And, he was from
the San Diego Padres.
And so the question kind of becomes with Mateo, and I'll send you the grade, what of him did you see? I know the hits were good, but there was really no power and the defense was okay. Where do you put that together to kind of give him a grade?
I really want to give him an incomplete, but I think that's a cop out. So I'm going to give him a C. I'm going to give him a solid C. Look, the defense, specifically at second base, the defense was really good. Not as good a defender at shortstop and at third base. They really didn't put him out in the outfield at all. I'd like to see him use that speed a little bit more than he did. I'd like to see more bunt base hits. I'd like to see him be a better base runner in base stealing situations. I feel like there are too many contested plays at second base on a stolen base attempt for a guy with his kind of speed. So I think he needs to improve as a base runner. I think it's a red flag that he got his first extensive look at the big league level and he ended the year on the IL. Now, we know that injuries happen. These little nagging things happen. I get that. But look, the Orioles have plenty of guys who have an injury history. I would rather him, and we all would, right? It's an easy thing to say. I'd rather he would have stayed healthy to give them an extended look. And that's the same thing for Ramon Urias, who you guys talked about the other day. You got to stay healthy. You got to prove that when you get your chance that you can take it and run with it. I don't think I saw enough from him to have confidence that he's a guy moving forward. Again, I'm going to use the word intrigued. I'm intrigued by him. I think he'll get a long look next spring. I don't know where he fits in next year, if at all, on this ball club.
So we'll get back to giving out grades to some of these Orioles infielders with Paul Valley in just a second. But first, this episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. You can save time and money when using rockauto.com, so why would you choose to spend 30, 50, or even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or dealership?
The prices at rockauto.com, they're reliably low for every single customer, and they've been that way for over 20 years. And they truly have everything you could need for your car. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And write Locked On Orioles in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
My thoughts on Jorge Mateo is this comment I'm going to make is kind of separate from how much he helps the Orioles win baseball games. But I think he is the most exciting player that the Orioles have claimed on waivers since Mike Elias has taken over. And Elias has claimed a lot of players and given them chances. And Mateo just plays the game a different way than a lot of Orioles guys do. He is one of the fastest players per sprint speed and Statcast in Major League Baseball. He's got that weapon in his back pocket. If he can get himself on first, this was the issue with him because the Padres didn't give him an extended chance because the Padres have been trying to win since they got him up. So he was really a utility bench guy for the Padres. But when he was there, like, he was almost a pinch runner most of the time. But when they started him, the thought was just, can Mateo get to first? Because if he gets to first, we're pretty certain he's going to get to second. And the issue is for him is just getting to first at this point. And that's why the Padres has kind of used him as a pinch runner for a while before they eventually decided to DFA him. You know, it was 32 games, 116 plate appearances with the Orioles. He hit well enough. I'm going to give him a C plus for the season. He hit 280, a 328 on base. You know, he had a 102 WRC plus, meant in his time, he was a better than average major league hitter. And with the defense he brings you, I mean, that's Mike Elias's perfect mold of versatility, a guy who can literally play every single position. You put him on your bench, and if anybody gets injured besides your catcher, Mateo can go out there and play that position to at least, you know, an average level of major league defense. And, you know, I'm intrigued by the speed, and, you know, he was able to steal five bases, which besides Cedric Mullins, nobody was really doing for the Orioles this year and haven't been doing for the Orioles for a long time. And it just, you know, I don't know how much the swing and miss hurts him because it was an issue in Baltimore, but it was a huge issue in San Diego. He had so much swing and miss in his swing for a guy that's not a huge, huge power hitter. And so at the end of the day, it's like, how much are you intrigued by the defense and his ability to steal bases, which, you know, before Mullins, we haven't seen an Oriole steal a lot of bases in a very long time. So it's kind of how much do you value that versus when he has gotten extended plate appearances, there's just been too much strikeout in his game where you can't get him to first before he can, you know, steal that base at second.
The thing about him, let me just ask you this on its surface. You look at him and you look at Kelvin Gutierrez and they look like the same player to me. I think Gutierrez is a better defender. We haven't seen enough, but really, and he had about the same sample size, Mateo, with the Orioles before he went down with the injury that we saw from Gutierrez from September into the end of the season. And they hit about the same. Gutierrez has the speed, not the same speed as Mateo, but on the surface, they look like the same player. Now, you think that that Gutierrez is a DFA candidate, but you think that Mateo is one of the more exciting players that the Orioles have picked up and that he has a shot next year. What's the difference other than the speed in your eyes? Because like I said, on the surface, they look like the same player.
I think it's speed. I think it's versatility, the ability to play the outfield, which Gutierrez doesn't have. And I know in the infield, Gutierrez is a better defender than Mateo. Like, there's no arguing that. And I think the other thing is, you know, the offensive stats were, as you said, they were fairly similar, but Mateo was better across the board. Not, you know, leaps and bounds better, just a little bit better across the board in every offensive stat. And I think the one other thing that, you know, this might not be how the Orioles take into account because this is the Orioles evaluating him versus, you know, how the Padres evaluated him versus how sites like Baseball America have evaluated him. But Jorge Mateo, I still think has a higher ceiling with his bat looking better at times. And just because he was a higher rated prospect, especially way back when with the Yankees, he was a pretty highly rated prospect when he was in, you know, when he was a 20, 21 year old. And I just think the ceiling is there where he's got more power in his game. He's got the speed, he's got the versatility. And I think you make a good point because I think these two are in fairly equal footing heading into 2022. I just think those things give Mateo a slight edge.
Sure, sure. And look, speed plays, right? I mean, Cedric Mullins before this year, he led the majors in 2020 in bump base hits. He had 9, right? So it's one of those things where speed doesn't slump, you know? So I get it. You want to put Mateo in the lineup because if he gets on base, it's a double every time. If he gets on first base, I don't feel like either of these guys did enough to warrant giving them serious consideration next year, but I also don't think either one of them did too little to be DFA'd, if that makes any kind of sense. So I think that they're both going to get a long look, and I think that Mateo has a chance. I just think that Gutierrez has a better chance because of the defense and the position that he filled a hole in. There was a black hole otherwise all season long.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I think there could come down to a spot this offseason where, say, the Orioles do sign maybe one infielder, one like legitimate, you know, somewhat veteran major league infielder to come in and grab one of those spots. And then, you know, you would think Urias is at second, and then the other spot is up for grabs for one of these younger guys. There could be a time at one point when the Orioles protect their guys for the Rule 5 draft. They've signed maybe a couple pitchers and they've signed an infielder where maybe it does come down to like Mateo versus Gutierrez for one spot. Like, I could see that potentially happening. And this is the kind of conversation that the Orioles are going to be having, because there's definitely an argument to be made for both guys. But I would say Mateo and Gutierrez both were good surprises for the Orioles once they were claimed off of waivers. Yeah, I think the other two guys we're going to talk about were kind of disappointing this year, for different reasons. I'm going to start with Richie Martin, who, you know, did eventually get back to the big leagues this year. Remember, he was an Orioles Rule 5 pick, basically played the whole year in 2019 at shortstop, showed some great defense, showed some flashes at the plate, but you could see why, after being a first round pick, the A's, you know, eventually did not protect him in the Rule 5 draft. Then he breaks the wrist, misses all of 2020. Then he breaks the wrist again, and he gets injured twice in Norfolk. You know, they try to play him in the outfield. He breaks his wrist running into center field, into the wall, and he misses most of the season. And finally, when Richie Martin does get his chance back at the big leagues, it ends up being 37 games, about 100 plate appearances. It ended up being about the same sample size as we saw from Gutierrez and from Mateo this year. But it just was not there for me for Richie Martin. Now, he did hit 235, but there was a lot of luck. He had a 314 BABIP, which, you know, plays into some lucky hits for Martin, and the 51 WRC plus. You just can't have that on the major league field. And I thought the defense took a little bit of a step back. So I'll kind of ask you on Martin again. It's a smaller ish sample size, but what kind of grade do you give him in his really, really second year with the O's, because his whole 2020 was washed out?
D minus. Richie Martin, I have no hopes for him. He's a guy, in my opinion. It's nice that he was a first round pick. It's nice that the Orioles took him with the first pick in the Rule 5 draft. But nothing else about him is nice. He will make that stellar defensive play, but I believe his defensive run save was something like negative 32 this past year at shortstop. That's not good. He's proven in each year that he is overall not a good defender. He just can make a flashy play because he's fast, you know, and he's in the big, he's in professional baseball for a reason, but on a day-to-day basis, he's just not a good defender. And the bat doesn't play. He was hitting 214 at Norfolk this year. He didn't deserve a call up, but they gave him the call because they want to take a look at him. Right. This is a guy to me that of all these guys, they'll bring him into spring training next year. The best he can hope for, in my opinion, is a utility infielder. I don't have hope that he's ever going to be anything more than just a guy who's a defensive replacement and a pinch runner. And I don't think he uses the speed enough. I think that once he gets on base, he's got the speed where he can steal 20, 30 bags in the big leagues if he gets everyday playing time, but he just doesn't do it. He just doesn't run. For me, it's a D minus because he's been hurt the last 2 years and he hasn't taken advantage of his opportunities when he's got them.
This for me is nothing against Richie Martin. He seems like a nice guy. I've heard things from around the clubhouse that, you know, he's a pretty nice guy to be around. Yeah. But I hope this year that was the last we saw of Richie Martin in the big leagues with the Orioles. I think he's going to get DFA'd this offseason. I really do. I don't think anyone's going to claim him. I think he'll stick in the organization. And I think it's fine if he plays shortstop in Norfolk next year. Mm-hmm. Until, I should say, he would start blocking guys like Westberg and Henderson. But until they're ready for everyday shortstop reps at Norfolk, I'm fine with Richie Martin. But, you know, this is actually something I talked about on a recent episode, breaking down the Norfolk Tide season. You know, Mason McCoy, I don't think has any chance at the big leagues, but he was kind of the Tide's everyday shortstop this year. I almost feel like Richie Martin and Mason McCoy are kind of super similar players. The only difference is Martin was a former prospect and first round pick, and that's why he was the guy who got the chance in the majors. But when you break down the numbers and what they can do, it's not much different. You talked about he doesn't run. I mean, for a guy that can't really hit and plays solid defense and has speed, you got to bring the stolen bases to the game. he played in 26 games and did not steal a bag in 2021. Right. So you got to bring a little bit more there. And here's the other thing with Richie Martin. I mean, there's just no power. And we've seen a little bit of the flashes from guys like Gutierrez and Mateo we've talked about. There's zero power. He basically lucked into one home run this year. It was kind of a similar thing in 2019. He lucked into a few home runs. But, you know, the power numbers are bad. All of the defensive metrics from Fangraphs have him below average, which is not what you want to see, because the thought was he can't hit well, but hey, he was a really good shortstop in 2019. Wasn't the case this year either. He had injury problems to both of his wrists over the last 2 years. And it could be a coincidence that you break both wrists back-to-back years, but it's a little concerning as well when you're a shortstop and, you know, you're a guy who's not a power hitter and you need everything you can get from your wrists and everything you get from really everything when you're at the plate. And for Martin, I just feel like I can see him being in the organization, sticking at shortstop, being a utility guy in AAA, but I could also see him, you know, next year playing in AAA with the Orioles and then just kind of electing free agency after next year, because I don't think, unless there is just a mountain of injuries, I don't think the O's would give him a shot next year. And then in 2023, Westberg, Henderson, like here come the guys that are at shortstop and Richie Martin's just done. And I give him a D for his season because I honestly didn't think very highly of him after 19. We saw nothing in 2020 because of the injury. I didn't think he could take a step back. I thought he can only take a step forward after his first major league year. And I thought he took a step back and he just, I think is kind of out of it with the O's right now.
Yeah. I think that he's going to become a non-factor for them at some point. They may DFA him. I think they'll still bring him into spring training for depth, but I think I would be shocked if he finds his way onto the 40, if he finds his way onto the opening day roster or the roster in general, unless the Orioles are just as bad as they were this year, next year, there's just no reason that he should be on this team or even a consideration at this point.
Yeah. I think next year is the year that these infielders start to look over their shoulder a little bit. And I think if you're a Richie Martin, you're kind of at the bottom of the totem pole of the guys who have been in the major leagues. And, you know, we talked about Mateo and Gutierrez, like it stinks for Martin, but those two guys came in to Baltimore as waiver claims and it took them like 2 weeks to overstep Richie Martin in the pecking order in terms of infielders. And I think it's just kind of, it's time for Richie Martin.
So we're back to talking Orioles infielders with Paul Valley in just a second. But first, betonline.ag is back and better than ever. A new web interface for the start of the basketball season, more props, odds, and lines than ever before. As BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today, and you can receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive that bonus. And remember, the NBA season, it starts tonight. You can bet on it at betonline.ag. From basketball, football, baseball, postseason, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. And you can do it at betonline.ag, where the game starts.
And then there's the last guy we're going to talk about, who had the smallest sample size out of all these guys, and that is Jamai Jones, who ended up with only 72 plate appearances this year, came over to the Orioles and the Alex Cobb deal in the offseason, had already made his major league debut with the Angels in 2020. We thought, all right, let's get him in AAA for a couple months. Let's see him. The Orioles delayed and delayed and delayed that debut until finally, I believe it was late August, he finally got that call up to Baltimore. And we really didn't get to see much. I mean, there was even times for Jamai Jones where I think he went almost a week at one point without starting a game when he was on the major league roster. And it was just really weird how, you know, Jones was there and then Arias got hurt. And then the Orioles called up Pat Valeika again. And then Valeika just took all the at-bats again from Jamai Jones. And so I think it's fair to just give an incomplete here, but I was wondering if you had a grade for Jamai Jones and the little we saw of him.
It's got to be an incomplete. If you're going to allow me to do that, I'm going to say it's an incomplete. Simply because, A, if Pat Valeika is taking at-bats from you, a guy who has literally no future in Baltimore, that's a problem. Look, it was nice what he did in 2020 with the Angels. He used to be their number one overall prospect. He comes up and he goes 3-for-8 in three games with the Angels. And so the Orioles, the fans of the Orioles, excuse me, are clamoring for him all year. And why are they clamoring for him? Because they have nothing else that's close to big league ready. There's nothing else to hold on to. Everybody else that was big league ready is on the roster. So who are you excited about that you think has a realistic chance to be here? Jamai Jones, right? And this guy, he goes out and he got hurt at the beginning of the year, but then when he came back, he got hot. He was hitting like 296 at one point, and then he fell off a cliff. He finished the year. The power was nice. He had 12 home runs, but he hit 251, right? Then he comes up to the big league level. He hits 146, as you said, in 72 plate appearances. I didn't see enough of him, but the defense, the main reason they said they kept him down there was the defense at second base wasn't ready because he was an outfielder. He was converting it to second base. And just like Richie Martin, he's got the athleticism to show flashes and make a spectacular play here or there, but too many routine plays that didn't get made, right? Jamai Jones, he may one day be a quality big league player, an average big league player. Again, I don't know that it's going to be with the Orioles. I don't think they're going to give up on him yet. It's been way too small of a sample size. He'll be there in spring training. They'll give him an opportunity, but I think he goes back to AAA. And then you're going to say, look, man, you're going to really have to perform because we have plenty of guys who are outperforming you who have earned the right to be here and you haven't yet.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I got to go incomplete. And I don't like to do that because we have this whole segment set on grades, but we didn't see enough. And it was so inconsistent even when we did see it. Like he would get a stretch of games where he'd have, 15, 16, 17 plate appearances, and then he'd sit for 4 or 5 days and Pat Valaika would play. We wouldn't see him. There was one point where he had not played for so long where I'd forgotten that he was on the major league roster. And I think they pinch ran him. I was at the game, the Austin Hayes walk-off game, the last game against the Yankees. They pinch ran him in the 10th inning of that game. I was in the ballpark. I had forgotten that he was still on the major league roster because that was in the middle of his stretch where he didn't play for like a whole week except for pinch running in the 10th inning. And it almost like took me aback because I think he pinch ran for one of the catchers. And I was just like, why is he here if he could be getting at bats in AAA if you're just going to play Pat Valaika? And Brandon Hyde's saying was, Pat's much better defensively right now, and we just would like him out there for our pitchers. And that's probably right because Jones did struggle a bit at second, and for Valaika not looking good at short, he plays a solid second base. And I just don't know why he was up if he wasn't going to play. It ended up being a weird situation. I'm sure they felt a little bit of pressure to bring him up at some point. And there may have been a situation where Mike Elias, maybe after seeing him, through July, may have just said to himself, like, I'm okay if we don't see him up here, but there were just so many injuries to the infield and so many guys coming over on waiver claims that he almost got pushed into a corner where it was like, we have to call Jamai Jones up just for Jamai's confidence. Like he has to get a shot because all these other guys are getting a shot. And it was weird because if you remember when he first got called up, he got like some real bad calls against him in his first couple at bats where he struck out on balls like 3, 4, 5 baseballs off the plate. And you had to think like that probably just shrunk the confidence immediately because he probably felt good about his batter's eye. And then he gets, misses a few calls. And then all of a sudden he's only got a handful of hits by the end of the year. And I do think, again, they're not going to DFA him. He'll be here. He was a 1-for-1 guy as a former top prospect. He's going to be in spring training. He will get a shot in the major leagues next year. And I do think, as you said, I think he'll could be an average big league player. But what you do have to remember is, yes, the Orioles, it was the only player the Orioles got for a legitimate big league starting pitcher in Alex Cobb. But when you think back to what Cobb did in an Orioles uniform between injury and ineffectiveness and how much money he was owed, remember the Orioles had to eat a lot of money and they were lucky to not just to have to eat all of Cobb's money and they were lucky to get one player. So when you look at Jamai Jones like that, one side can look at him as former top prospect, 1-for-1 deal for a major leaguer. This guy was close to the big leagues. He should be good. When you look at it, the other side is the Orioles had to scrap and claw just to get one player for Cobb, and it was him. You can more easily understand why he kind of did struggle.
Yeah, and I think that that's important to look at because I thought about that all year. If Alex Cobb, A, wasn't good in Baltimore, and B, had that big contract that the Orioles had to eat a lot of money on, why were the Angels willing to give up Jamai Jones for Alex Cobb? What did they see in him that maybe as the average fan can't see? There's a reason they were willing to give him up for Alex Cobb. So that's how I kind of looked at it. Everybody was saying, oh, he should be up here. Oh, he should be up here. And there was a point where I said that. But then when I watched that average dip day after day after day, all the way down to at one point, I think he was hit 238 at AAA. The gap this year between AAA and the major leagues was so big. It was so big talent-wise. When I'm watching a guy hit 238, just like a Yusmeel Diaz who hit 154 at AAA, that's a red flag. That's a guy who I don't think can play at the big league level. You're not going to hit 238 at AAA and then come up to the majors and be a 270 hitter. It's just not going to happen. So Jamai Jones, yeah, incomplete's the best thing that we can say about him. He'll get a look next year, but I don't know how far beyond that it's going to go.
Yeah, and I'm hoping at the end of the day he can become like a utility infielder, be a solid guy who, you know, just like Mateo I talked about, like has that outfield background where if he's on your bench, like he can come in and play the outfield as well, which makes him inherently more valuable in getting on a big league roster. But I think the bat will come around enough where he'll get a large sample size of at-bats next year. And then when we do this again after the 2022 season, we'll really be able to evaluate Jones and kind of where he fits in, if he fits in long-term. Right. With the Orioles. But Paul, thank you so much for joining us to talk about. Again, we weren't talking about the stars of this Orioles team, but I think this was one of the more interesting groups we're doing this on, because I think all four of these guys have a chance to play for the Orioles next year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think out of these four, there's a good chance that one of them could get a bigger chance, maybe break out next year, you know, if it's Gutierrez or Mateo or whatever it may be, and turn into like a nice little piece that Mike Elias has picked up. That's obviously the hope. And I think each of these guys have a chance, but thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, man. If they get an everyday player out of this group, even if for just 2022, I think it's big enough of a deal that people should be paying attention. But no, I was happy to do it. Appreciate you thinking of me and having me on. I look forward to talking to you again soon, man.
So our thanks again to Paul Valley, the co-host of the Bat Around show that covers the Orioles over at PressBox. Every Saturday morning from 10 a.m. to noon, you can hear him alongside Zach Goodman, who was on this podcast yesterday to kick off our Orioles 2021 season player grade series. We talked about the starting outfield on yesterday's episode as Zach and I gave out grades to Cedric Mullins, Austin Hayes, and Anthony Santander, and really got into the future for Santander with the Orioles, where he could end up this offseason. So if you haven't heard the first edition of this look, go back to Monday's episode number 391, to check that out with Zach Goodman. And then today, his co-host at the Bat Around, that is Paul Valley, talking about the reserve infielders. Paul also now got a nice little promotion, new gig for him. The lead producer and co-host of Glenn Clark Radio throughout the week over at PressBox in the mornings with Glenn as well. So big congratulations to him, and he'll continue talking about not just the Orioles, but all things Baltimore and, you know, sports in general with Glenn Clark over there. So cool spot for Paul, but still able to come on this podcast and drop some knowledge as well. And definitely, you know, interesting conversations across the board about, you know, Jamai Jones and where he may fit in moving forward, and were we concerned about what his role ended up being in Baltimore this year. And, you know, we are on the same page about Richie Martin being done. I think a lot of people kind of feel that. But really the most interesting part talking with Paul was kind of the Kelvin Gutierrez versus Jorge Mateo thing we got into. And again, you know, these aren't two guys competing for an everyday starting infield spot going into 2022, but they definitely could be two guys competing for maybe a starting spot at the beginning of the year as you wait for a prospect, or potentially some sort of utility infielder role off the bench, that it could come down really to Gutierrez versus Mateo in spring training next year. The way we also talked about it, you know, if the Orioles really want to bring in some other players, whether it's on waivers or trades or by signing guys this offseason, there may come a time where they have to make a decision on the 40-man roster. Like, do we keep Gutierrez or Mateo, in thinking that they may have to DFA one of them? So I think between now and opening day, you know, at the end of March of 2022, there could really definitely be a spot where Mike Elias and his staff have to, in some way, shape, or form, choose between Jorge Mateo and Kelvin Gutierrez for a spot. And, you know, there's always the chance that they both could be gone at some point, or they both easily are on the roster. But I really do think there's a spot where that happens. And it's definitely an interesting conversation. I'm more team Mateo there. You know, you get the higher upside, all the speed he brings, the versatility. But Paul, you know, kind of on Gutierrez's side with the defense he brings in the infield, and, you know, the way his bat did come around a bit at the end of the season. But definitely a good conversation with Paul right there. In Orioles land, you know, speaking of younger guys with the Orioles, like we talked about today, they released their instructional camp roster as a bunch of players, mostly prospects, will go down to Sarasota. They won't really play games, but we'll get some further instruction. And there's a lot of guys who, you know, were injured in the minors for a lot of this year that will be in that camp, like Joey Ortiz, like DL Hall, Carter Baumler, who the Orioles took in the fifth round out of high school in 2020, got Tommy John, still hasn't pitched for the O's in the minors. He'll be there as well. But the biggest name I just wanted to drop in there before we go, Heston Kerstad is on the list. He will be in instructional camp here this fall. And again, they're not playing games, but just to have him there doing baseball activities is such a huge, huge plus for Kerstad. Of course, the Orioles took him second overall in the 2020 draft, the left-handed hitting corner outfielder out of Arkansas, and some great college numbers, incredible hitter, and just had this myocarditis, this heart issue, and it has kept him out of baseball activities really since that draft back in 2020. And, you know, we saw him taking BP earlier this summer. We knew he wasn't going to play in the minors this summer, but the goal was to get him into a minor league game on opening day of 2022. And it looks like that could happen, as he is going to be really resuming baseball activities at camp. That is such a fantastic sign, not just for the Orioles and for Kerstad on the field, but just for his health to know that he's back at that point. Just fantastic news coming out on Monday for the Orioles. But here on this podcast, unless any bigger news breaks between now and then, tomorrow we'll be right back here with more report card grades for the Orioles. We talked reserve infielders today. We're going to go back to that starting infield tomorrow, as Dylan Atkinson is going to join us once again. He's a writer over at Utah Street Report. And we're going to give out grades to those top infielders for the Orioles. We're going to take a look at Trey Mancini. We're going to take a look at Ryan Mountcastle and his fantastic season. We'll look at the breakout year for Ramon Urias. And we'll also take a look at Pat Valeika and ask the question, is he an Oriole in 2022? Answer is probably not. But, you know, we also kind of asked that question about Trey Mancini. Will he be an Oriole in 2022? But a really good conversation as we give out grades to the starting infielders with Dylan Atkinson on our next episode. But that's all coming up tomorrow here on the pod. Until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.